Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This podcast was brought to you by LivePerson.com. LivePerson.com, a world of experts.
This episode is brought to you in part by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. Did you know you can get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today? And all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/investor.
Well, hello and welcome. This is Andrew Horowitz, and this is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Welcome aboard, episode number 84. And I guess that means we're doing this about a year and a half now, plus or minus. And it's been a lot of fun in... it's been a disaster, hasn't it? It's been just an absolute unmitigated disaster. It's one thing after the next. If it's not that the markets are going down, it's, we have the Treasury Secretary pulling the TARP. If it's not the TARP, it's the automakers, not the automakers, it's the Citigroup. If it's not Citigroup, I'm sure it's going to be something else next week. And when they were talking about originally, when the news was all full of, just a full of flutter with this discussion of another shoe dropping, what's next? They weren't kidding. I mean, it's enough to really make you want to question every single aspect of the financial markets and really almost of our country's economic base, because it's almost everything is crumbling all around us. It's amazing that it started with this one little, you know, outpouring of desire to give people who really couldn't qualify for homes the opportunity to live the American dream, and the cascading effect of, you know, really over-leveraging and having giving mortgages to people who rightfully maybe didn't deserve to be spending what they spent, and creating these extraordinarily, as we know now, dangerous styles of derivative investments that would be, theoretically, they were for protection. They were for insurance, but that didn't seem to work out too well. And what they did was, when they created this monstrosity that we have now, and even though we even hear the great Warren Buffett, which I'll get to in a second, He was totally against derivatives as one of the worst things that could ever happen. Well, we even find out last week that he has a $40 billion exposure to a CDS exposure, and that's a real problem plaguing Berkshire Hathaway shares right now. But you know, overall, it was an interesting, it almost could have been planned, where we set the trap to have greed as the fundamental backing of all this. And then from there, we go into, you know, providing extraordinary levels of opportunity for people that they just couldn't refuse. Spiraled out of control, and here we are. But we still haven't gotten the big one that I had really been looking for. And it's somewhere in the background. It's going to rear its head. And that is the credit card crunch. I mean, what is going to happen? It's one thing when we have a bank with a collateralized debt, right? They have a home behind the mortgage, and that's, you know, providing at least some kind of backstop and some kind of collateral. But what happens when we have uncollateralized debt, credit cards, where people say, well, we just can't pay? What's going to happen then? And the numbers are enormous. I don't know if you've seen them lately, but Bloomberg had been reporting, and a few others, about how much debt really is in this system. You know, how much are we really responsible for, and who's going to pay? Right now, there was a really interesting story last week that estimated that the overall cost for this has been already exceeding $3 trillion. If you add in the $540 that's being the backstop for mutual funds by the Fed, and they cleaned off their entire balance sheet, which I think it was about $800 billion in the beginning of the year. And you add in the TARP, you add in the various and sundry little bailouts here and there. You also add in the fact that there was, I don't know if you know this, but in the TARP, there was a little left, you know, very quietly kind of constructed change to a tax law that was put in a few years ago, which effectively allowed for the banks that were being covered through the TARP to have a $240 billion tax benefit. Yep, that's right. You heard me right. $240 billion tax benefit by just a stroke of the pen. When the TARP was signed, it was embedded in there. Most people really never caught it. and it gave the banks a $240 billion tax benefit. Amazing. So that TARP really cost over $1 trillion initially. And then from there, when you add it all together, and now with the automobile industry, which is just, I don't even want to bring that up because that's just too much to even bear when we talk about the fact that giving $50, $100 billion to an automobile company that came to Congress without a plan. The audacity of these guys, they can fly in their private planes, I don't care. But the audacity of them to come in and to actually it's amazing. It's remarkable. You know, this is just part and parcel of what they've done. If it didn't cost us, you know, five times the amount it's going to cost us to bail them out, I would tell them to just drop dead and just, you know what? Auto companies, have a nice day. You didn't do the right job for 15 years. You bled the system dry. You didn't stand up to the unions. I mean, it's just enough. Just enough. I don't know too many people that disagree with me. I haven't heard yet. Nobody wants the automobile companies to be bailed out, but we realize that if we don't, we're talking about an extra, I don't know, million jobs lost. And not because they're going to go out, because we're going to have bankruptcy for General Motors, right? That's the obvious direction right now. So next week we'll be dealing with General Motors and Ford and Citibank all at once, and we don't know what else. But the good news is, there is a good news piece here, he said tongue-in-cheek. The good news is that Barack Obama, President-elect Barack Obama, came up with a plan. First of all, he's got some new people at the helm, and we had this big rally because of that, right? Wrong. We had a big rally because there was a concerted effort to bring option prices to the right levels where they needed to be in order to push many of the puts that were sold in the money, and the big investment firms wanted to keep their premiums. Now, we may have a few follow-through days here, but let's be careful. There's no economic news to the contrary. Unless we're just going to have a rally that's built on hope, well, that could happen. That definitely can happen. I'm not going to be jumping in, you know, head first. Yeah, we'll be loosening up our shorts, that, you know, short positions that we have done in the last couple of days. But at the same time, we'll stand ready to make sure that we don't get slammed by any means. I mean, last week with that incredible movement in every direction, I think the S&P still finished down about 8%, I believe it was, for the week ending the 21st, I think it was. We finished up about 2.9% on the TDI managed growth strategy. I think that, you know, you realize you have to be very, very nimble right here and don't get ahead of yourself. But what he did was he also announced an economic recovery package, or at least some employment recovery package, where he estimated that he'll have about 2.5 million people working by 2011. Now, at first, that sounds really great. But if you think about what's happening, we're losing 500,000 jobs a month or so. Is that the right number? I think so. Initial claims numbers, if you kind of add it up. And right now we have 10 million people out of work, and the jobs rate is 6.3%. Now, if you extrapolate that out over the next few months, we know there's going to be layoffs. We just heard about Citibank's 50,000 and 10,000 here, 5,000 there. That being the case, let's be very conservative, and let's say that over the next year we'll have a loss of another, I don't know, we'll call it another million jobs. So if Barack Obama's and his team's job to bring back 2.5 million jobs by 2011 works, we're still going to have historic unemployment for a number of years. How does that fit into the economy? I don't think it works too well, to be honest with you. It doesn't seem like that's a real plan to spur on dramatic changes, but we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. But all in all, I guess let's take a breath and realize that it is a short week, and we are going to be heading right into the Thanksgiving holiday, and I thought no better to spend a little time and think about what else but corn futures. Yeah, we have Thomas Grisafi, and he is the founder of Indiana Grain Company and a trader. And I just met him, but he's a great guy. And he agreed to come on and tell us some of the things that, you know, how it is to trade futures and commodities, and something really that, you know, there's kind of a couple different sides of the street. One of them, you know, if you deal with stocks and bonds and traditional financial instruments, oftentimes you don't really deal with the other side. And I'm kind of curious myself to see what that's all about. So we're going to bring him on in a second. And then the other thing that I did want to mention was that, a couple things I want to mention. I mentioned before that about Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett. And it's interesting because about a month ago, I was looking at his portfolio, the positions that he has inside of his portfolio. And when we get back in a second, I'm going to share that with you. And I have a question that was just gnawing at me for a while. I was wondering why the stock Berkshire Hathaway was holding up so well for such a long period of time with stocks in there that were just horrendous. And I mentioned before that it also, or I think I mentioned, I want to talk about the mutual fund companies. I wrote a few pieces on the mutual fund companies. In particular, we were short. We just on Thursday of last week, timely as that was, we closed the positions entirely of Franklin Resources, BEN. We were short. Legg Mason, we were short. And also, we were short T. Rowe Price Associates. Each of those came down substantially, and we had some marvelous profits there. I believe that there's still a gigantic hole and a problem. What I was mentioning before was that I had so many emails from people that were really just so disappointed with their mutual funds and the fact that the 401ks, and it's really not even funny that the 401ks have been so damaged at this point, and the question is where to go from here. Hedging is really not an option for the most part, and you can market time, but that often doesn't work. So it's a very difficult decision right now what to do, you know, whether or not we're going to see another leg down here or if we're going to see some, you know, straightening out. But I will tell you, it's not going to be a direct rise up and a recapture of what we had, considering all the economic news we have, as well as the condition of the global theater, if you will. I think that the big issue here we really have to contend with is what to do next and how do we change. One of the things that really troubled me was the whole idea that we saw this incredible, I guess it was stubbornness by advisors. You know, I was watching a CNBC show last night just for a few minutes. I couldn't take it anymore. There's a new anchor on, a young woman, and she was talking about how, really you got to hold on to things just like Susie Orman did. And Steve Leisman, who's an economist, was talking about portfolios. I don't understand how that fit together. But he was talking about, you don't want to really have to sell because if you sell, you don't know if you're going to market time and catch the bottom, and it's those few days up. I mean, they're talking about ancient history here. They're talking about the way it used to be when there was returns that were moderate. And sure, if we have 5 and 7% years, you know, obviously you could do a rebalance and find those portfolios and positions and sectors that maybe should be added to that were really beaten down and those that were, you know, doing very well. And when you only have maybe a 5% variation in returns, that's fine. But we're seeing that in an afternoon now. I mean, we're seeing that in 2 hours. You can't assume that you just rotate in, because if you kept on rotating like this, these ridiculous hacks, these CFPs and these advisors that are just absolutely giving the wrong advice. And I told you this, remember my soapbox where I was standing high and I was telling you to fire them all? I'll tell you, I'm not changing that one bit, because the idea of just trying to time the markets and trying to also do a rebalance where you move money into the lowest yielding or lowest performing, for example, let me give you an example. You have 20% of your portfolio in 5 different sectors. One of the sectors goes down by 50%. One of them's up 3%. Well, you take off the one that's the best and you move it to the lowest. Now, I don't know about you, but that makes no sense. Can you imagine if you kept putting money in the financials this entire year? I mean, I don't know where their heads are at. I really don't understand what they're thinking. It's stupidity. It's pure stupidity. They think that mutual funds are the answer. We have things down 50, 55% this year. Guys, wake up. I mean, I know you want to stay in business, but you need to change. There was a time before mutual funds, before all of you were lazy. And you know what? Some of you may listen to one of my fellow podcasters who has this lazy portfolio. I don't even want to know what it's at. I don't even know where it is. We've had arguments, he and I, about, you know, why would you be an active investor? You know, there is no way that a passive investor in this stage of the game through any asset allocation, diversification, has done anything but down 20, 30% this year at best. You know what I'm talking about. Without getting into this whole thing, I mean, the bottom line is mutual funds are going to be very passe, and the companies, for the most part, are in big trouble. Watch the layoffs. Fidelity did a gigantic layoff. They're being sold because the parent companies can't afford to keep them, and they're obviously not profitable any longer. And it will take some time to repair them. ETFs and individual stocks and alternative investments like that, as opposed to the traditional, are really the play, because, you know, if you're sitting there in mutual funds, you know the pain I'm talking about. It's been a very, very difficult time. And trying to climb back from a 50% loss, it's just not going to happen in the short term utilizing those same strategies. And rebalancing, the stupidest thing I've heard in a long time. Anyway, we're going to get right back on the Disciplined Investor. We're going to also talk about Warren Buffett and corn, futures, commodities. We'll be right back. Stick around on the Disciplined Investor podcast.
Hi, I'm David James. I'm an expert to the world
in spirituality.
There are millions of experts who are brilliant in the kinds of things everyone needs answers to.
Hi, my name is Larry Doan. I'm an immigration lawyer in Los Angeles.
Now you can chat with them live, online, and benefit from their knowledge.
Hi, I'm Jamie Parker, a public relations specialist and an expert to the world on LivePerson.com.
There's a world of experts on LivePerson.com. Chat live. It's free to start. LivePerson.com, a world of experts.
Well, welcome back. This is Andrew Horowitz, and you're listening to the Disciplined Investor podcast. And, you know, this, I think this time of year, it's a great time of year to start thinking about, you know, holidays and regrouping. And, you know, hopefully you've been far away from the markets in terms of really participating with some of this downside. Unless you're a trader. But one of the things I like to do this time of year is start thinking about, you know, what's going to be my reading list. And actually, I like to listen to things. So Audible podcasts are Audible books and podcasts are just a terrific way to really, you know, bring in information. Now, I got to tell you, if you haven't checked out Audible, it is amazing. And they have a special offer, actually, for listeners of the Disciplined Investor podcast. It's a two-week free offer, no strings attached. You can get your free book, as a matter of fact. Just download it. It's you just simply go to audiblepodcast.com/investor, and you'll download something. And I have some great books. I mean, my book's on there. You can get my book if you want. And there's thousands. I mean, such an amazing array of books there. And if you haven't done so, you know, for the iPhone or your iPod, whether it's a business book, I mean, you know, Obama's book is on there, and whether you're going to listen to, you know, one of the great biographies that are – I love biographies. That's what I really like. I mean, you know, right now, one of the – if you haven't read there's a book about Steve Jobs, The Second Coming of Steve Jobs. That was just a great book. It's a little bit old, but it was a great book to really understand – all about Steve Jobs and what he does. I would recommend that. And of course, if you're having a time trying to really be effective, because a lot of distractions these days, isn't there? A lot of distractions. Stephen Covey has a book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, an oldie but a goodie, another one, classic. Really teaches you how to really put things in its place and to understand the, you know, what's important and how to really be effective and productive. So check it out at audiblepodcast.com/investor. So before we get to the guest, real quick, I want to just talk about one thing. So if you take a look, if I took a look at Warren Buffett's portfolio, and you can do that very simply, just, you know, go to anywhere and break it down in his annual reports. He'll show you what he's holding. And when I did this, the portfolio was down about 16%, about a little over a month ago, I guess, when I first started looking into this. And what I was really shocked by, I'm just going to read you some names. I want to read you some of the things that he holds. And I guess it's about maybe 50 holdings entirely. I mean, a tremendous amount of shares, right? Bank of America, 5 million shares, CarMax, Home Depot, Lowe's, WellPoint. But here's the ones that he has a tremendous amount of shares. American Express, 151 million shares. That's a big one, right? Johnson & Johnson, that's good stuff. But, you know, when you look at things like, you know, that are really falling, you have SunTrust Banks, you have a few million shares there. You have Walmart, of course. You have Moody's, which is just an unmitigated disaster. 48 million shares of Moody's. And go look at that stock. That's unbelievable what's going on with that one. ConocoPhillips, NRG Energy, U.S. Bank Corp. He has currently. And I guess the point is that when you look at all these, you add them up and cross-reference it, and you start thinking about how much he has in each of these positions. And, you know, at the time it was down 16%. It's no wonder that he came down another, I think it's close to 20% since then. I mean, he's down with the markets or worse. The amount of money that he lost this year on the Goldman Sachs deal and on the recent General Electric deal is just enough to sink a small country. And I wonder what's going to be his response from when he came out with the announcement about a month and a half ago to start buying stocks. And things are down probably close to 20% since then. So I don't know what you think about that. I know he's, you know, this nice, lovable guy, and he's the richest guy in the world, and, you know, he can buy and sell all of us, and he's a lot smarter than I am. But what do you think about that? I mean, how do you feel about Warren Buffett giving us advice just gratuitously and just saying buy stocks? And I wonder. I'm not so quite sure he's the kind, gentle grandpa that he appears to be. Maybe I'm wrong. What do I know? But I'd love to hear what you have to say. You know, of course, you can mail me anytime at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And also, of course, if you go to Discipline Investor, all the things about today's show will be on the show notes. And if you want to do the virtual tour for the Discipline Investor Managed Growth Strategy, I think you're going to enjoy that private blog for all of our investors. And we are up officially 2.9% since inception on the 1st of July is the first inception date for that. So not too bad considering what's going on, I guess. And but let's get to corn. It's Thanksgiving. Let's take a look at what's going on in the commodity world and welcome our guest, Thomas Grisafi. And if you recall, Thomas is with the Indiana Grain Company. And he is, of course, like I said, a trader. You can go to indianagrain.com. And Thomas, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Andrew.
So, you know what? You've been involved just in the last, I don't know, in the last 6 months with some just amazing volatility in terms of these commodities. I mean, I was looking at corn because we were looking at buying a company, which is kind of interesting because I don't think in the last 20 years I've had to really look as hard at things like commodities when I'm thinking about buying stocks. So we're going to buy something called Sanderson Farms last year, and I wanted to make sure that we weren't going to get, you know, whipsawed with the price of corn, which obviously was going to be the feed for the chickens. So corn went bonkers this summer. I mean, you know, is that something, you know, what's going on with all these commodities, and why are we seeing this kind of volatility?
Andrew, it's a great question. There's so many variables that go into the grain market, and I'm trying to learn them as fast as I can also, but I would say the number one influence in corn, two influences, is one, China demand, and just the world as a whole is expanding in the growth of population and people's wanting to eat better quality food, and second, the push of ethanol that we use, you know, one-fourth, possibly even maybe at one point talked about using one-third of our corn crop for ethanol. And there was definitely a food versus fuel debate, and the market worked it out. It got the price high enough that, you know, someone won.
But somehow this, you know, if you go to like the Bloomberg homepage and you can see the commodity chart, it does this amazing spike into the summer, obviously, and then it just obviously falls off to nowhere. And it was all blamed at the time on this whole idea that, yeah, China, India, the world is just chewing through every bit of food and, you know, every commodity that you could think of in terms of eating it and using it. But what was so amazing was that fall off. In other words, I couldn't imagine, and I still can't imagine, how we really had that kind of supply shortage or demand, you know, that massive amount of demand to really say that, okay, we see that the price have gone up and we're seeing the supply being stripped. And then what was the turning point that it fell so rapidly, or was it a big hoax to begin with?
You never quite know that answer, and I'm still shaking my head. It wasn't long ago I was sitting on a balcony in Marco Island, Florida, in a summer day in June, first couple weeks in June, that first time we had that big crude move. I think it was like $11, $12, biggest move in crude. All the big-time Wall Street companies were coming out saying we'd be 150 by 4th of July and 200 by the fall. Well, you know, they're only off by a little bit. Today we're below $50.
right.
And most of the companies who made those projections aren't even in business. So I just remember sitting on the balcony at the Marco Island Marriott going, wow, I can't believe this. You know, what's this world coming to? And now here we are 6 months later, and I'm shaking my head saying, what's this world coming to?
Right.
But it's not that we're $200 crude. We're $50 crude. We're $3 corn. We're back to quote-unquote normal. We're 7,500 Dow futures, and now I'm shaking my head for a different reason. And Andrew, I wish I could tell you, you know, we could talk a little bit about some of the reasons why I think that might have happened, but I think anyone who would tell you they knew why is just, you know, probably fibbing.
Yeah.
But one point that really bothered me is when the government got involved and said, we need to get rid of the speculators. We are going to, almost it sounded to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that they're going to punish the speculator for making money by buying commodities. And as you and I know, and your listeners know, for the most part, commodities are a zero-sum game. There's a buyer and a seller. And, you know, anyone who's ever seen Trading Places could have a laugh on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, people made money on the way up. And, of course, a lot of people lost a lot of money on the way up. And now we're talking about as crazy a problems as, you know, on the way up, GM was having problems because gas was so high. Now, as I just traveled across the country all night last night, I drove from Minneapolis, Minnesota to the center of Iowa and actually back here to Indiana to watch the markets go crazy. And I just recently, as 5 hours ago, paid $1.69 for gas.
Oh, you did not?
In the middle of Iowa.
That's unbelievable.
So
wow.
How things have changed.
That almost makes me want to buy a Ford F-150.
Yeah, no, I didn't feel too bad about the SUV I was driving. Right. But the funny thing is, and it's not too funny because people are losing a lot of money, is that the very companies who need these products have been whipsawed both coming and going. They need to buy the product, so they paid such. Take the airlines for example. They paid up so much. They couldn't get fuel bought fast enough, so then they finally got it bought, probably at crude at 120, 130, 140. And now you hear that today, why is crude going down? Because the airlines are caught long it with their hedges, that they actually have bad hedges on. So they were short on the way up, they're long on the way down, and it's just becoming a disaster. And
yeah, one of the things we heard about that was that all along, the smartest of the airlines was Southwest, which had great hedges on the way up. But did they get whacked on the backside? You know?
I think they are. I know, I want to say, I'm not a big stock trader. Just have a little Scott Trade account in Dabble, which that could be expensive. But I want to say that for the first time ever, they had losing numbers last quarter for like the first time in maybe, I don't know, 40-some quarters. Mm. Like, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to.
No, they're all doing pretty lousy.
Does that sound right?
Yeah, they're doing pretty lousy.
So, and, you know, today, you know, is $25 billion enough for GM?
Yeah.
I thought GM was going out of business in June because of high fuel prices. Now I'm paying nothing for fuel, and you know we're it's amazing.
Yep. So let me ask you. So on a daily basis, you trade commodities, and what's that? What is that all about? I mean, you've worked in the pits, right?
Yes, sir.
So tell me about that. Give me a little bit of experience. Kind of give me a visualization of what that's all about.
Sure. The pits are interesting. They're competitive. There are some talented traders. There's nepotism. There's you know, country club buddies, and I just didn't feel that after trading in the pits from 93 to 2000 with, I had some success, but nothing crazy. And at one point I actually went to Germany and saw Eurex and Deutsche Börse and in 1998, I was just amazed there was no pits.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of like, where's the floor? And they're like, there's no floor.
Right. I've done that before, by the way. I've traveled around and every country I go to for a while, I was saying, oh, I'd love to see your stock exchange. They're like, there is no stock exchange.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Right.
Nobody's doing
No,
it's all electronic.
So I just remember one day in 2000, I think it was like September 2000, I just walked out of the pit and just went home. I think at the time I lived at my parents' house and I was single and I said, I'm not going back to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my folks are like, what are you going to do? I'm like, I just trade on the screen. They're not going to make any more floor. So it was a long process, and it took several years of struggling to get back to making money. The problem with the floor trader is usually they can go down there and make an okay living, and they're so used to making that living that they don't want to, or they can't afford to take those few years off to learn how to trade on the screen.
So let me ask you, is it a lot different trading a commodity, do you think, versus a stock, in terms of if you're doing it on the screen anyway, if you're doing, you know, trading online or with a level two, is there a big difference? Doesn't matter if it's called, you know, GM or Sears, or if it's called IBM, or if it's called corn or wheat or oil? Is there any difference?
I think it's changed. I think the traditional commodity trader over the last few years might have struggled. He or she could have been following the fundamentals of, you know, it's spring, it's this. They could have been following how many acres are planted, but when crude makes a move from $50 to $150 in a year, at that point corn didn't become corn, it became another commodity. And I think you definitely start to see, I know I did, because a lot of my commodity trading is done at night. As the market became more global, I realized that, you know, the traditional guy going down to the floor from 9:30 to 1:15 with the, you know, luxury Mercedes trading hours, that's over. You know, at any point, someone might want to trade, and there's opportunity. So the corn became like gold and silver. Corn became like crude oil. And now as crude oil goes down, corn gets beat down with it. There's a, you know, some days they say it went down because of the stock. Some days they say it went down because of the crude.
Well, they have to find a reason for it. I mean, they have to pick something out of the hat and say that's what it was caused by.
Sure. Ultimately, I think we are starting to go back to the true fundamentals of supply and demand, and how much corn do we have, how much are we selling, and the more traditional economics of the grain industry.
So you obviously trade on the screen, but let's talk about delivery, because that's something, you know, I've never really traded. We utilize commodity baskets, if you will, but not truly the commodities, not the futures. But we use the commodities inside of our portfolios for a quote-unquote diversifier. Now, let's be realistic that as everything is going down, there is no diversifier. I mean, it seems to be that everything is moving in tandem these days. It's almost like a wave of financial assets, and I'd consider commodities a financial asset only because you could trade it, right? So, you know, there's this kind of wave up and down, and we're not getting much diversification, traditional diversification, like one up, one down, necessarily from commodities. But do you ever have to deliver? I mean, when I think commodities and futures, oftentimes I'm thinking about delivery issues and, you know, what ifs.
Sure. I'm pretty much a front-month scalper, similar to what I did in the pit. The benefit of trading on the screen is you can be, when you were in the corn pit, that was it, you were in the corn pit. And now with the screen, I could be in the...
Oh, you got an alert in the background. What's happening?
That's Bloomberg electronically talking.
Oh.
Markets never sleep, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to the pit, you know, I was limited to my abilities to trade corn and trade in the corn pit. And then as grains progressed and went electronic, it really leaves a lot of upside to be able to trade corn, wheat, beans, oats, gold, silver, S&Ps. And then, although I do agree that there has been no safe haven, it's not safe to be long S&Ps and, you know, short corn, or, you know, at this point, every class and every asset, I know of very few that haven't been affected by this recent downturn. And not just affected a little, affected dramatically.
Right. No, the numbers are absurd.
The most professionals in the industry, someone like yourself or anyone, is, I don't know many people not confused at this point.
Oh, I mean, I guess you should see me in the office, my friend. You know, when I see, you know, something come out and it move in the opposite direction, that it doesn't always have to move in the same direction you believe it should, because there's underlying issues, right? There's things that may be beneath the surface expectations. There's, you know, forward issues, little truncations of information that we didn't see. But at the same time, it appears to me that there are so many times of late that I have said that just doesn't make any sense what's going on. And I will tell you, just in full disclosure, and my listeners know this very well, that at the time of the summer when the crude oil was you know, moving towards the 150 mark, and Goldman was just, you know, whistling all the way home about oil going to 200 in a very short matter, and freaking everybody out, by the way,
sure.
I was one of the big proponents on this whole speculator issue. Now, let me just clarify this. There's a difference between speculation and manipulation. A big difference. I think you'd agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And the thing is, speculation, even though it sounds dirty, you know, it kind of has that connotation to it.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, we're all speculators. Anybody that invests in any stocks, that's the base root of the word. We're a speculator. But, the, mm-hmm. you know, we're risking something to make something. We're speculating on the outcome. The difference is manipulation. And I felt, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Professor Greenberger. We had him on several occasions on the show. He was the one, former CTFC hound dog of some sort, and he basically was showing why the ICE, the Intercontinental Commodity Exchange, was an unregulated body when it came to oil with the Enron loophole. Now, I don't mean to, you know, bring that all up and drudge up this horrible past, and frankly, we made nice money because we shorted it at that time, and that's good. But the fact is that you know, when I look at some of these markets, you know, I got to wonder, I mean, who's pulling the strings? I mean, do you have any sense of in the commodity area, you know, because of the tremendous variation, is it just people saying, I'm fed up, I'm done, and getting out? So,
Andrew, that's a great question, and I think I could help your listeners out on that. Is for 150-some years, the commodities traded in the pit, and so if one of the big players like Cargill or ADM came in and sold 5,000 contracts of corn, it was very obvious who was doing it. Now, there might be someone behind them, it could be Paul Tudor Jones. You wouldn't know. They don't advertise it. But with the massive amount of volume transitioning to the screen, that's one of the challenging things. You could look at it as good or bad. I'd say most people think it's bad. I personally don't mind. But I haven't had a clue who I've traded with for a year and a half. I pretty much exclusively trade out of my home office in Valparaiso, Indiana. And The exchange doesn't tell you who you're trading with. So if I buy a little bit of corn or a lot or any other commodity, I have no idea. And I can't tell you how many examples of where I'm watching gold trade, and that's it's just up $5, $10, up $40, $50. Mm. You know, did a bomb go off in Russia? Is this 9/11? Anyone who traded through 9/11, anytime you see something like gold move $40 in 2 minutes, you have to wonder, is something going wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know it, so we don't know who we're trading with, which just adds that much more confusion and the head shaking. And when you have a winning position on, it's great. And when you have a loser, you always want to know, well, who bought it, who sold it, why. But pretty much, I just look at the markets, that there's a bid and an offer, and take it to be real. And if you think it's going down, sell it. And if you think it's going up, buy it. And who you trade with at this point, who knows?
Right.
Not to mention the way people clear trades, that they can go through a firm to go through a firm and do a give up and a back office transfer, and you'd never see it.
Right. So the transparency is a question, and it makes it a little bit more difficult.
It's gone.
Yep, it's gone. Well, right. it's just the state of where we are, and if we haven't broken the markets, broken the back of the markets, I mean all the markets, the trading markets, because of the lack of trust, the fiduciary responsibility of those powers that be, if you will, have just blown it, and kind of this I keep thinking the word lately. The word stewardship, you know, it's just blown. It's not because the markets are down because all of this has happened, right? It's just the culmination of the things that have happened to get us to this point that really bothers me.
Absolutely.
You know?
I wouldn't mind touching more on the subject of the Goldman Sachs's of the world or investigations of speculation.
Yep, go ahead.
As I was driving across the country last night and this morning, I had CNBC on and XM Radio.
Back up. How do you drive and have the CNBC at the same time? How'd they go?
The XM Radio. The CNBC and Bloomberg on the XM Sirius Radio.
All right.
And but also, a lot of time when we travel across the country, we have an RV bus, so it actually has DirecTV that works, like the little John Mann satellite. Mm-hmm. So we travel across the country and we're actually able to trade from the bus. So we.
Oh, this sounds like I can only visualize what this looks like. That must be fun. I want to go.
We'll have to stop by and come visit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think they're giving RVs away right now.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think if you buy one tank of gas, you get an RV for free. Actually, mm-hmm. So. I haven't heard one call of any investigations of any. No one's ordered any investigations. I think it's funny, and the very companies who. I don't know if they pumped and dumped the commodities or other things. You know, Goldman Sachs today is trading at $50. You know?
Well, they. You want my opinion from all the data that I've gathered? My data that I've seen between the heating oil with Morgan Stanley taking basically almost a full position of the Northeast to the unbelievable amount of trading that was done and lockups of contracts and futures of oil by Goldman throughout the summer on the ICE. And if you notice something, I did a lot of work on this. And one of the things that was interesting, when Feinstein and they passed the law, remember they passed the Farm Bill? And part of that was to close the Enron loophole. You're familiar with that, right?
A little bit. Basically,
the Enron loophole allowed for oil futures on the ICE to be outside the regulatory and totally non-transparent or totally opaque transactions. You didn't know what was going on, who was doing what. And this was unbelievable. This is for a number of years this went on. And so people were doing things like, basically locking up markets. And then what was interesting was they let the law down that closed the Enron loophole for all of the energy trade. And what was interesting at that point, the only thing that was left out was oil. It was still allowed to be traded exactly like it was on the ICE. People were asking for records of trades and histories, and it was not available. Then an interesting thing happened. One day, the CTFC, first of all, their powers to investigate had been enacted again. It's only been about 6 or 7 times. I think there was a cotton issue once. There was a silver issue once historically.
Mm-hmm.
They were enacted again and given these broad powers to do whatever they want to do. And what happened, they put down a law that said they changed the status of who would be considered – now, I'm trying to think what the word was – I think it was speculator. It was a change in the
There's
status.
There's like 4 classes of speculator, investor.
They changed it. I
am familiar with that.
That day, if you look at a chart, is the day oil started going down and the trading stopped at that level.
they made the class of investor, hedge funds were hiding as if they were commercials,
mm-hmm.
like they, as if they really used the oil.
Right, that's a commercial.
When they weren't, right. Or in the commodity way I had described to me as hedge funds would pretend they're a commercial and go through Cargill, but Cargill's really the commercial, and mm-hmm. it's a great way of cooking the books, and I'm pretty familiar with that was about the turn. Absolutely.
So you confirm, I mean, from what you know of what I'm saying, right? So that's when we
started. Saw it that day, but...
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable. I mean, from then to now. And then what was also interesting was a dead giveaway that Goldman, I think, and Morgan took on I believe it was a 25% ownership of the Dubai Exchange. It was mm-hmm. a newly formed mm-hmm. exchange, basically to once again, since they had no ability to be hiding behind the world in the ICE, they would now do that at the next level on the Dubai, which was a new startup. So that was kind mm-hmm. of a giveaway, in my opinion, as well. And I think what happened is that they lost all their money with not being able to do the mortgages and the subprimes and all the things that went on. They had to find another outlet. And now, my opinion is
that they try to do that with Citadel. Aren't they? You know, when the CME stock went from 600 down to 500 or 450 real quick, Citadel was going to combine with some other people and start their own exchange. They said,
yeah. But the thing is that now it seems to me that all these little things. And especially because of the tremendous volatility we're seeing now, individuals are not moving stocks up 500 points in a half hour or whatever. That's not happening. There's some major buy programs or something going on. And it is my opinion that the way that money is being made in these kind of waves right now is the last kind of hoorah for some of these guys, because they're taking this and moving it around in such a way. And maybe it's not, obviously it's not going to last because you can't just make it all the time. But they no longer do the hide behind the oil. They no longer could do these incredibly rich deals with when it comes to mortgages and splitting them off and pretty much mm-hmm. taking double the money that they made from one deal. And then they had to find something else. And this is the last frontier they have right now before the whole thing just disappears. So and Goldman's they got their prop. They no longer have a prop desk. Did you see that?
I've read several things on Bloomberg about several groups closing proprietary trading desks. Every day there's a different company laying off 5,000, 50,000 traders. I mean, I think it's bad for the exchanges. Yeah, I don't see where the new trading volume is going to come from if they're laying off all these traders.
Right, but the other thing is, if Goldman is closing their prop desk, I think we all know how incredibly profitable that was.
Absolutely.
Where are they going to make the profits from at this point? They're going to be a bank doing what? There's no IPO deals.
Right. On the $1.50 access charge to go to the cash station. I don't know.
It's ridiculous. Anyway, so let's skip over. So where's some good sites that somebody can go to check out like the pricing and maybe charts? And I mean, I've often found that commodities is very difficult to get something with all due respect free or something with a low cost. There's always access fees and all that. Your site, let me just give a quick plug is a blog there. A lot of information. You got some nice scrolling pricing going on all these commodities and all sorts of. It's a good looking site. I like it a lot. It's IndianaGrain.com, and I encourage everybody to go check it out. A lot of good information there. But what would you recommend for someone to, where could they go to see what's going on in the world of commodities?
A couple other good sites are AgWeb and DTN. And I personally find that there's not a lot of good places to go and read about what's happening in the agricultural world. Most of the data needs to be paid for, whether, it's through different accounts you have with commodities brokers that they send you stuff. And I'm amazed at how limited the information is out there for a trader wanting to educate him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very shocked. So I personally pay for a lot of information.
Sure.
I like Dennis Gartman. He writes a little bit in his thing every day about mm-hmm. commodities. And I pay for a Bloomberg terminal and CQG and DTN and just try to scroll through them and see what's out there and try to watch the overall world market.
So let's take a different tack here. And you obviously trade, but let's talk about the world of commodities, because on one hand, we've been actually buying AEM, Archer Daniels Midland, and very, very gingerly mm-hmm. of late, first time entering into that stock in a while. And
it's acting well, though.
Yeah, it's acting very well, as a matter of fact. I mean, considering, right? So question I have, it seems apparent to me that after all the the dust settles and whatever's going on in the market, still the fact is that Archer Daniels Quality Company is going to be feeding the world and providing all sorts of goods and services in terms of commodities and all in various forms. I mean, do you think we really have the even any remote level of demand from China, India, and the emerging world markets, considering all the things that have gone on of late, anywhere near what was speculated maybe a year ago?
I think we do. I think one of the hidden gems in the industry is going to be part of my switch from trading in the pits, and the whole move to commodities was reading Jim Rogers' book, Hot Commodities, and something as simple as that, and the onset of electronic trading and the globalization of just the world wanting to buy and sell stuff and the access to it. Mm-hmm. We've had some crazy things happen. We've had, a few months ago, you couldn't get a ship to, the grain was here. You couldn't physically get a ship, then fill it up with grain and send it overseas. And now, now the shipping's dropped by 2/3. So there's some crazy things happening, but people need to eat. There's plenty of people in the world and they're not going to go away. And they might not need to own Citigroup at $5, but they're definitely going to try to or want to eat tonight.
Yeah, well, that's probably good. I mean, hopefully at least. So let's talk about the shippers for a minute. You know, the dry ship companies, the Excel Maritime and the dry ships and C-SPAN, a few other guys. I mean, they have been obliterated. And again, I know you're not a stock guy, but they've been obliterated.
But it's all kind of combined, though, Andrew.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You say you're not a stock guy. If I'm sitting here and it's 1 o'clock and I'm watching Potash and ADM and Monsanto and Bunge all making 52-week lows, do I really want to be long corn? I mean,
right. They're
forcing you to be a stock guy
because the
volatility in the stocks is affecting everything.
So those are companies that I thought, again, we bought them and had very, very tight sell stops. That was good, I must tell you. We got stopped out was it Monsanto? No. We had Potash and we had Mosaic. Mosaic, we got stopped mm-hmm. out on 80. I don't even know where it is exactly now, but it's a half the man it used to be. And are these companies that
it
are
closed even, at 22.31 today? If you really want to be bummed out or happy that you got,
well, I guess I'm happy. Well, I could have shorted it. I'd be really happy.
52-week lows.
That's
yeah.
unbelievable. That's unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, but let's talk about whether or not these viable companies that are really they seem to be really good companies for a while. I mean, all the earnings, all the numbers, all the estimates still look pretty good. And Intrepid Potash get cremated last week. I mean, is this something that maybe even that, as low as they are and as horrible as things look, that it's, I mean, they have a future?
Yeah, I don't see the whole food sector going away. I don't think in a few months there'll be 3 car companies in the United States, but there's definitely, I was actually at a farm last night in the middle of Iowa, and we talked about where the farmer buys the seed and the technology that goes into the seed and the way these new hybrids of seed, the triple stacking and all this other stuff are working. And, the farmer saw the stock market had a bad day. He's still going to plant a crop this spring, and I don't know if he'll get the price he wants for it, but, nothing. Once you get out of the big city and get away from the quote screen, life out in the country seems pretty much normal.
Right.
I think everyone's 401ks turned into 201ks, and life's going on.
Yeah, I hear you. But
I think they're good, solid companies.
Right.
ADM went as low as like $13. I mean, it went from 45 to 13 in a few months. That was incredible.
Right. No, it's a pretty spooky place out there right now. So you go to farms and you visit. Do you visit because of your do you visit them because you're trying to get a bearing on what's going on with the various grains and wheats and things? Is that what you're doing, or you just like traveling?
Well, one of the goals I had, Andrew, and one of the reasons for having the website was I think unlike, any of us could look at our quote terminals and see where a stock's trading. It's really hard to get your feel on where the corn crop is. If we plant 90 million acres of corn in the United States, one farmer's crop might be fine, and then 5 miles away he might be having problems because he didn't get enough rain. So one of my goals is to get out and communicate with the farmer. I'm an independent trader. I'm looking forward to starting my own CTA, but I'd like to know 5 or 6 farmers in every state and see how their crop's doing, not depending on some young kid out of college who's writing an ag newswire saying that it's dry in a state
right.
or... it seems like you asked a good question before. Where do you get your information? I'm trying to create my own information. I'm not going to depend on anyone else's. I'm not going to let Goldman Sachs tell me crude's at 150. It's going to 200.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to figure it out for myself.
So
and I think the whole crowd anyone who watches Mad Money at Night or any other, you know, TV show has just been obliterated because they're listening to people. You know, one thing I wanted to talk to you about was a year ago I was caught short stocks at the high, and I didn't really understand. I knew so many friends and family who were struggling and having problems paying their mortgage, losing jobs, and putting money on credit cards. I couldn't understand how stocks were doing so well.
Yep.
And when it was making all-time highs around last Halloween, not one person came out on CNBC and said, at this time next year, we'll be at 7,000. Not one. I heard 16, 20, 22,000. I heard everything under the sun. And I have all these TVs in my basement and picture in picture, and never do I hear where it's going to... The only crazy guy I ever heard was this Mark Faber, or Faber, Mark Faber.
Right.
And no one wants to have him on TV because he's such doom and gloom.
Right.
But about three quarters of the things he said actually came true.
Actually, you know what?
Just a few months,
some of the guys we had on, Ms. Shedlock has been talking about a 40% down. Four podcasts ago, 1 month ago, talked about another 40% down. Harry Dent, a year and a half ago, we had on talking about a horrible situation. We had Barry Ruertholz talking about all sorts of short issues. If you look at my blog, we've been talking about shorts. I mean, I was screaming about Crocs short at 80 and Sears short at 130, and I got more hate mail than I can imagine. People don't want to hear it. And I got more hate mail, the one show that I did that said, you know, how bad things are. And I got people sending me notes telling me that all I did was talk about negative issues, that I don't see the world correctly. And then, you know what's happened? The exact opposite. Now I get all sorts of mail telling me that, you know, I cannot tell you how much money we've saved us, because the last year we've been, you know, telling people how ugly the situation is. There's something that you got to tell me, and you may actually be the hero of the week here. You know, when you go to these farms, do you actually get in one of those big combines and drive them? Because those look really cool.
We were in a combine last night.
You're killing me.
So,
oh, man. You just feel on top of the world, huh?
We'll have to send you pictures.
Yeah, send us pictures. Yeah. We'll put it on the show notes for this podcast, actually.
Sounds good.
So you've been doing a lot of driving around. You know, you say that you're in this magic trading bus, and you're telling me actually before the show about your most recent trip, right? So you went. You know, tell me about that. I think it's interesting that my listeners will hear about this.
Well, my partner and I, Michael Esney, we received an email that the Minneapolis Grain Exchange was closing their floor as of December 19th, and it's one of the few exchanges I haven't visited, and I had the privilege of going up to Winnipeg and seeing the Winnipeg Commodity Exchange close, which is now owned by ICE, and it's what really motivated me in 2005 to full-blown start trading grains electronically, partner up with a good firm, and that was the future of commodities and grains. And now the Minneapolis Grain Exchange is closing December 19th, and that's the first American trading floor to really say, that's it, we're done. We're flipping the switch, we're going all electronic, and that's it. Thanks for playing.
So you think, just to extrapolate out, I'm hearing from you probably that you're thinking this is going to be a trend?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys in Chicago still trying to hold on to something. I think they go down to the floor and they drink the magic lemonade and they believe it's going to be there. And there's just been a lot of money from listening to people who don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, that's why the price of the stocks are going down so much. And these exchanges are going to have to condense. They're not going to, you know, maybe when the CME was trading $700 a share, they could have a floor and an electronic platform. But at $160 a share, they're going to start to look to cut costs, and having both running at the same time is not probably on their agenda.
So, you know, it's interesting you mentioned about people not knowing what they're talking about, or at least they know what they're talking about, but they're talking out of the, you know, they're telling us the wrong thing. So there's a guy that I've watched before from time to time, is Brian Westbury. He's on CNBC every once in a while, and I could see him right in front of me, and he comes on and talks, and this is, let's talk about it, 6 months ago plus, into saying there is no recession, you're out of your mind, you don't know what you're talking about, that people are talking about.
The guy talking right now on CNBC?
No, there's some guy that was, you know, he's been on. Yeah. I don't know when, you know, who, but the guy Brian, and I've always wondered, why would somebody say that when all of the indicators, all of them, are very clearly laid out? Now,
sure.
I'm not suggesting that anybody could have called the depth of this, let's be honest, right? I mean, this is getting out of hand. But you know, there's a difference between that and you know, the level of denial. But so to ask you then, obviously, if you do believe that there is a lot of people that don't know that what they're talking about. You mentioned a couple of people that you like. You know, you talked about Dennis Gartman. You talked about Jim Rogers, the bow tie guy that rides motorcycles and lives in China, I believe. Who else do Absolutely. You who else do you like, and who else is it that somebody that you feel could be trusted and at least you know, they could be wrong from time to time, no question about that, but at least
sure.
or have a good vision.
I think that the whole world's changed, and that the new super commodity trader, we don't know who it is yet, but I figure someone's going to have to take the reins and trade commodities in the new way, which is trading what we do down here 20 hours a day when they're open. I've searched the internet, and I really, besides Dennis Gartman and Jim Rogers, there's probably some phenomenal commodity traders out there, and I'm sure Paul Tudor Jones, I'd love to talk to him, but these people don't readily make themselves available. So if they're not writing books to promote themselves, T. Boone Pickens, he wrote this book, and by the time the book came out, everything he said in it, the prices were off by $60 a barrel just in the printing press. And I like him, I respect him, but geez, Luis, he says crude's going to trade 100, not in his lifetime, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, listen,
in ours, we're a little younger.
Yeah. You know, T. Boone Pickens, interesting, felt like, love his name. The other thing I think that, I think what's happened of late, and whether it was by just sheer coincidence of all of this coming together, I mean, I think the biggest blunder, and I've been very disturbed about, the Berkshire Hathaway situation where Warren Buffett, first of all, there was a time about a month and a half ago that you could not get away from what would Warren, a title of an article, what would Warren Buffett do? I mean, it was like all over the place. Like somehow he's the god of investing. He's got 25 companies that he owns. Yes, he is the richest man in the world, and I'm not taking anything away from him.
He was till the last few days. Yeah,
well, right, and he's a lot smarter than me than I'll ever be, and seen a lot more than I'll ever see. But there was something inherently wrong with us all following like just little, like little sheep. And when I took apart his portfolio recently, I started looking at it about a month ago, and I said, these names are awful in his portfolio, and a lot of financial and a lot of problems, and how could it only be down at the time 16% with all that I see going on? And then when he came out with his buy stocks, I said, oh my, that is the most horrendous advice I've ever heard in my life. This blanket, because there's so many people that trust him implicitly.
Sure.
And, and then we see his company's now down about, Berkshire's down about 40% or so. I don't even know where it's.
Absolutely.
And then. And then on top of that, he's there, with kind of this magic wand, and people are wondering, what are we going to do now? I don't know. I mean, again, the people that have been there to lead us to slaughter, frankly, have a lot of explaining to do. So.
Right.
I don't know.
Going back to your question about who I look to, I just do my own research. I know that if I was to follow some of these guys, I'd be broke by now.
Yep.
So ultimately, I just have to be responsible for my own trading account and try not to worship too many traders. Respect them, but don't worship them. And ultimately, if you're planning on becoming a good trader, you're going to have to learn and take your own beatings and stand back up and fight the fight the next day,
right?
Then develop your own disciplines.
I hear you.
Those are hard to do, as you know.
Oh, it's very hard. We talk about disciplines all the time. I mean, some things we have to, you also have to bob and weave, change in strategy, and it's quite an incredible time. So, again, I want to thank you. That's make sure everybody visits you over there. Thomas Grisafi over at Indiana Grain Company, indianagrain.com. You got to go check out he has a picture of his trading room, which is, I think, part of his house. He built out this trading room. It's really cool looking. He's got just the boards across all the room, around it, sweeping all in 360 degrees, and also has all these computer screens. But what I like the best, and you got to look and find this, is the red phone right in the middle of the desk. It's kind of like the emergency get out phone, I suppose, in closed positions. But anyway, thanks so much for that. I think that was kind of interesting. So with that, we're going to close it for the day, and thank you. We'll be around next week after Thanksgiving, and hoping to bring you a few things. We're looking into some of the Chinese infrastructure development countries. That's our next play, I believe. If you haven't checked out again, we are now still in first place with the Strategy Lab, MSN Strategy Lab, up about 13% as of the end of the week. And we'll see what happens next week. But being very, very careful and playing close to the vest. And, right now we're staying very disciplined. So thanks for listening. We'll see you real soon. This is Andrew Horowitz, the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.